o'clock, it's raining in the park, but meantime.
I'm a little excited today because we've got one of our favorite guests. Not only a great guest, I mean, you can be a favorite guest, I guess, without being a great guest, but I don't think that would work. Or you can, maybe it's the other way. You could be a great guest, but not no shit, but just be a good guy. But not this guy, Tim. Our guest today is one of our friends and a friend of the show, so that's why Golf Spiritual Leader's all excited. You know, I'm all giddy. Coach Tim, how are you today, my friend?
I'm good. I'm good. You know, I've recovered from my dog throwing up at the back door.
That just happened.
You know, life, things happen in life, and we go along.
We're about to tee off here with another episode. Tim goes, I got to go. My dog puked. I'm like, okay, cool. That's the kind of show we're running. It's Swing Thoughts. I think the last week was episode 262, but it's a lot of them, and we're really excited, as always, to welcome everyone back. Hope you're having a great week. We're recording this on the 28th of June, a Friday, just ahead of the long weekend here in Canada. Hope everyone has a safe and healthy, happy one, and gets a chance to maybe play a little bit. But before we get to all of that, let's get to this, our title sponsor, TaylorMade Golf Canada.
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
I'm telling you right now, watching Tim O'Connor last Thursday in our two-man event, which I can't remember. Did we record after we played the event, or did we do it before?
We did. I think we've done the debrief on that memorable event.
Well, just in case people have forgotten, GSL and Tim finished second to some sandbagging bastards. So,
who shall go unnamed?
Yeah, but listen, we played well. Tim held us in there on several holes, and he cracked it. He cracked that driver off the tee, man. He hits it good. And we're pleased to have TaylorMade back for another year, as well as our clothing sponsor. That's right. We did talk about how good we looked.
Absolutely. And I was looking good. I was a sharp dressed man on Tuesday. Yeah. I played in the Golf Journalist Association of Canada event. And yes, resplendent in my Oscar Bravo polo. And I was even complimented by David Coukes, one of the, I guess you would say, co-founders of that famous brand. And so we were talking about the polos and how mine was stain free.
Yeah, and good for you.
So those amazing shirts, check them out at whoisoscarbravo.com. Yeah, is that something like I hold over you?
I really should just, get up and pre-stain the shirts before I leave the house. I should just do it because I can't make it through the day because I'm a child. How good is that course, Brantford? I'm sorry I couldn't make it, but that was too many days in a row for me. Tim and I were invited to this media thing at Brantford, and I've had a chance to play it since the redo, whatever, the golf course, and that is a nice, nice, nice track.
Yeah, a Stanley Thompson course that's even better now. Really good. Like every golf course, it had its funky bits, but they've softened some of those.
Yeah.
The course is really amazing. I will add a quick footnote. On the first hole, it was like there's a sudden hurricane. It's like a giant branch fell away from us, and then a house caught on fire. And we thought, oh my God, maybe this is the day going to go so swimmingly.
No, see, I would be the opposite. It's like that scene in The World According to Garp where the plane flies into the house, and Robin Williams says, we have to buy this house because that's never going to happen again. So, what did you say? It has some of its quirky bits or
something like that. Yeah.
All right. Like all of us at this age, we all have got some of our quirky bits are softening. One more sponsor to thank, secretlinks.golf. If you're looking to do something very different, in Mexico. Go check out that unique offering. And speaking of unique, welcome back to this program. A man with over... Well, I'm sure when this site was written, it was years ago, probably 40 years now, in performance coaching. Is it 40? It's got to be 40. 30? 35 years? He is a certified trainer of neuro-linguistic programming. His client list includes players from the PGA Tour, Europe Tour, DP World Tour, LPGA Tour, Korn Ferry, the European Tour, and so forth and so on. He also works with top-level amateurs and juniors, including several national amateur champions, Division I and two college players. But more importantly, he is just a very good person, and we're happy and proud to call him friend. Welcome back to our program, Paul Dooland, Esquire.
My heart is warmed.
It should be. It should be, man. You know, I was telling somebody about you the other day. You came up in conversation, and I talked about the fact that we had worked together for some time, and I had never seen you. Here's how long we had been working together, because we were doing our stuff on Skype at the time.
Yep.
And I'd never seen you in person. And then when I saw you in person, it was like the first time you see Peter Boyle in Young Frankenstein, you're like, holy shit, this guy's huge. Yep. And I was like, look at you. And then you picked me up with your giant hands and set me down on the range. Anyway, it's good to see you again, buddy.
You too, both of you.
So Tim got a, I got a note from Tim saying, hey, Doolin's coming on the show. I said, that's fantastic. Any reason, Tim?
Well, I happened to read that Amy Yang had finally, according to Golf Digest, added a major to her impressive resume. And I saw our good friend Paul got some ink saying that, you know, she'd been doing some work with Paul Dooland. And so I thought, well, that if there's a good reason to get Paul back on our show, that would be it. So, you know, I know, Paul, you didn't hit the shots. You don't take credit for winning, but that must have felt really good with the work you've been doing with her.
Yeah, for her. I'm super excited for her. She, I don't know if you guys know the history of her. She was sort of out of Korea. She's from South Korea. She was the next phenom coming out, sort of the next Suri Pak. And at 16 or 17, she won a European Ladies Tour event, I think as an amateur. And then, you know, got her LPGA status at 17. And she had played in, like, I think on the broadcast they said 75 majors without winning one. She had come very close in several. And... until last year, she hadn't even won on U.S. soil, but she had won in Asia. And it was not for a lack of skill. She is incredibly skilled. I mean, at 34 now, I think she's 34 now, to hit the shots that she hit on that very tight, difficult golf course last week, and to do what she needed to do, there's no lack of skill in that girl whatsoever. She takes really good care of her body too, so that helps at her age. But what's satisfying is that she said that she didn't want to retire, because she's getting close to retirement. She didn't want to retire until she had won a major, and she did that. And to witness her doing that and to be a part of it is really cool.
Yeah. Now you're typical of Doolin. He's deflecting any credit, but I kind of think it would be interesting for people who maybe you haven't heard Paul on the show. He's been on a bunch of times, and I think we have a sense. He's a mental performance coach, but I'm curious, and I think the others would be too. What is some of the work? What can you outline some of the work you do with her, and how long you've been doing it, and what maybe finally clicked, or what are some of the things that helped her finally break through to this bigger event?
As usual with anyone, it's she's no different from anybody else I would work with. Just her skill level's that good that she was, you know, at that level. A lot of it was her having to learn how to it's been about 4 years, so I'm trying to backtrack into sort of the beginnings of our work. as you guys know, with my stuff, one of the big themes for performance is understanding what you control. Developing the ability to stabilize your attention to stay focused on those things and strengthen that so that it sustains itself under pressure, or so-called pressure. And in those situations, like a major, it's very easy to get distracted with the stories of, you know, where am I at? Oh, no, this is in the rough. I might make bogey here and I'm only one in the lead or something like that. And being able to constantly bring her back to what she has control over. And basically what that comes down to is the preparation to execute. Being able to stay in that and stay committed once you've made a decision and you trust that decision, just stay committed to what you're doing and stay in the process of executing while you execute, which all sounds very simple, but you've got to train that. And to understand that concept, to practice it and practice and then practice on the course and then eventually be able to do it on a consistent basis in a tournament took her some time. It wasn't like we did anything revolutionary. And this is probably the best message from her story is she's just remarkably consistent and just kept coming back to the same old things. And, you know, my job was fairly easy. I just kept bringing her back to the same stuff. She's easily distracted from the things she needs to focus on. And that's a big role in all of her coaches is to just keep bringing her back to the simple fundamentals and realizing there's no quick fix. And last year in the fall, she won the tour championship, the CME Globe, I think they call it. And that was her first win on U.S. soil. And I think that was good preparation for a major. Her game hadn't been very good at the beginning of the year, but she was consistently practicing everything we worked on. So when her game technically finally came around, and again, that's important for everyone to know, because just because your game is good, if you're off mentally, then you're going to have limited access to that. And likewise, if your game's really bad, your mental health's not going to make your game better. You just get out the most you can out of what you have. And that's what she had been doing. But she didn't have a very good game. She needed to do some technical work. Finally started to gel a couple of weeks before the KPMG event last week. And then it all just came together. And she had a lot of luck, too. I mean, she had some good bounces and all the rest of it.
I was just quickly, Tim, a couple things you said. You said about having a commitment and then being committed while you're hitting it. I think that's important for amateurs. So maybe just answer that again, if you wouldn't, or just expand on that. And then during the actual tournament, do you have any contact with her?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In between rounds, for sure. Like, pretty much every day there's at least a text or a call or whatever, depending on what's going on. She's so far down the road with our stuff, it's usually just texts, because a call is usually when we need to either, you know, discuss something and get feedback or introduce something, an idea. Texts are good for just reinforcing things that she already knows and doesn't really need to be reminded of, except for just like, hey, just focus on that thing. What was your question?
About being committed, you said, staying committed while you're executing a shot.
Yeah. So a lot of people, I'll answer the question indirectly. I think it might be interesting for people to hear. Everybody talks about the word confidence in golf.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the word as it relates to your game. Because the definition, if you look up the definition, I think the rough definition in Webster's is the state of being certain. No one on this planet is certain of where the ball is going to go. But yet, when they're hitting it good, they walk around and say, I got a lot of confidence. But what that does is set you up to be an incredibly fragile China doll, because confidence will come and go when it's attached to something that you don't control and you can't predict. So when you lose confidence, it feels devastating. When you have it, it feels awesome, and your ego's strutting around with its chest stuck out. So there's that you know, that whole just, you know, walking around with some mojo. Versus, look, if you want to have confidence, you have to earn that confidence from yourself by being consistent with the way you do your work. that you're thorough in your practice and preparation, and that you know that you can predict in the future that you're going to do those things properly. So I have confidence in myself to do them, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to hit it well. It means I'm going to get everything I can out of myself. And that's the job of a professional, or anyone who's committed to their game, is that you have to just get what you can out of what you have that day. And that's, you know, when your game's bad and you attach confidence to your game, you're not going to commit to the process, because it's almost like I got to get my confidence back to be able to play. And it's a really harmful cycle. So I like the word commitment in the place of confidence, because it's like, look, I don't know where this is going. I've done everything. I know I've done everything I can to prepare. So I'm all in on this. And if you're not all in, it's almost like there's two people swinging the golf club. One's pulling back in hesitation in cases, and the other one's trying to make it go towards the target. Maybe a third one's trying to go to the spot you're trying to hit at if you're being smart in your course management. So sometimes there's three of us swinging a golf club.
So, Paul, I'm sure a lot of people have been thinking about, you know, where does Rory McIlroy go from here? And I'm sure that Amy may have had some of the same things. I mean, I think they're both close to the same age. For Rory, when is it I'm going to win another major? Amy, was it when I'm going to win a major? You may have already covered it, but and I think you have, but gosh, it's so hard to me for how do people keep the story at bay, or what they think is sort of like my legacy, or just what's been carved out for me. How does that commitment help them keep those stories and maybe belief systems at bay?
Really, to me, it's just what you pay attention to on a consistent basis over time. I marvel at the fact that Rory even got himself into the position to win after everything that he's gone through, you know, divorce, a publicly broadcast divorce. I mean, I've never had one, but I understand they're very difficult to go through.
And they're expensive too, by the way.
And
yeah, and then it's publicly recanted.
Yeah, then the
and you know, all of the stuff that goes with that. The fact that he got himself into that position is a testimony to his ability to go out and focus on these things. So as much as everybody's like, oh, he's, you know, he missed those putts or whatever, I'm like, fair enough. But oh my God, to get in that position, I hope he's proud of himself. Like, 'cause he probably had to do some significant things internally to get engaged in his job, and let's let all those other things sort of fall away for the time being.
I want to circle back to go ahead.
Tony. Just supplementary on. So, did you have to do much work with Amy around this? Is I'm sure that as time went on, you know, she's getting older. Like, am I ever going to win my major?
Yeah. With every player, and especially professionals, because their lifestyle is very difficult. They're almost always dealing with something that nobody knows about. And so to contend with all of those things and have to compartmentalize and set those aside and just focus on, you know, what's in front of you. Cause there is a lot coming at all of those players. Like when you watch them out there, it's like, they look like their life is one of luxury where they have all this money and it's easy. You know, private jets and all that stuff. And it's some truth that adds convenience, but they have a very complex life, especially the ones that are in the spotlight. So to be able to separate that out and just focus on what's in front of you, that takes time. If you haven't developed that ability, that takes time to develop. And Amy worked very, very hard on that, not only on and off, but off course, and keeping those boundaries and separations clear.
So I wanted to circle back, and this will sort of tie into something you just said, because the amateurs listening, all of us, and you know that's a saying, everyone you meet in the world is struggling with something you know nothing about. So we all bring things to the game of golf from off the golf course, but maybe you can articulate a little bit more about how a professional puts things aside, or what the process is, or what you advise people to do in terms of putting aside whatever else and focusing on the shot at hand. That there's a practice to that. And a lot of what goes wrong, if we're honest in our golf games, is less about the technical and more about the shot in front of you and how committed you are to it. As you said, we're often thinking about different things, but maybe talk a little bit about how one brings focus to that.
So, a couple things. So, we've talked about attention control on this broadcast before, I think. Or podcast, sorry.
It's both a broadcast and a podcast.
So, on this show, I have talked about attention control before. So, practicing the ability to focus your attention and maintain it for extended periods of time. No one can keep it constantly, but in bursts of periods of time when you need to have it there, that meditation is a way to develop that skill. That has to be developed. One of the other things that's a little more psychology-ish, if you want,
mm-hmm.
well, they're both kind of the same, but psychology stuff, but is when your identity is attached to something, your emotional reactions to the events that in which your identity is attached are going to be amplified. And our attention loves stuff with emotion. It's almost like a magnetic field that as soon as our sense of self is attached to something, our emotions start to get revved up, and therefore our attention wants to go to those things, because it's that our attention being attracted to emotional things is a survival instinct. If you're getting chased by a bear, you want your attention to automatically lock into something that is a threat. Unfortunately, when our identity is attached to something like, you know, I'm a golfer versus I play golf, it would be a language pattern you might hear, that any threat to your sense of self, in other words, like, well, I'm a crappy golfer now, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, this is a threat to me. This isn't just a threat to my game. And then it amplifies the emotion, and our attention is more easily drawn to it. So the stronger, it's almost like there's a magnetic field that you have to be strong enough to pull yourself out of that magnetic field or gravitational pull or whatever you might want to call
it. So what are some of the things you work when you're working with somebody, if I may interject? And so, and I think we all buy that sometimes our identity gets, you know, so wrapped up in the outcome of a particular day, a particular round, even a shot where you're nervous. Maybe it's a hole in your course you don't like. It's got a carry that always makes you nervous. And so, of course, your identity is wrapped up in the outcome of that shot. So how do we combat that?
So you don't combat that. What you have to do is deliberately and consciously form what you want to center your identity around. Okay. So as you guys know from the chats we've had in the past, anxiety, pressure, and frustration are products of valuing things we don't have control over. So if you attach your sense of self, your identity, to what you do not control, automatically you are going to go into some adverse emotional states. And then everybody's like, okay, so let's try and manage our emotions. It's like, fair enough, you know, breathe away, all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you have to get to the roots of the problem. And that is that our identity is free floating. We don't anchor it to something. So back to what we do control, is attaching your sense of self to the things you have control over. So that it's like, did I prepare properly for this event versus how did I perform in the event?
Mm. I love that.
Yeah. Well, Paul, one of the interesting things that we're getting in here is in essence, the use of language. I don't think we often pay enough attention to that, because it might strike some of our listeners as kind of a nuance. I'm a golfer versus I play golf, but I think there's a massive difference. And it's the same thing when I hear people say, oh, I suck in bunkers. I can't close a tournament. Martin Seligman, known as kind of the founder of forget what it is. It's positive psychology or something. That's not positive thinking, but it's being aware of our thinking. And so how much do you work with your players when you hear them use language like that? Like, I suck in bunkers or I can't close. Yeah. Just do you address their language and how they use it?
Yeah, constantly. It's one of the most beneficial things that came out of neurolinguistics for me, is understanding how language, and just to change the language is kind of like a whitewashing, but to actually realize that the language that we use unconsciously is a reflection of our internal representations of things. So if someone says, I am a lousy golfer, versus that was a bad shot, that's a hint that they're attaching their sense of self to how they hit the ball. I'm a failure versus that tournament didn't go very well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. It's all, you hear it all the time, and it's so normal that we don't pay much attention to it. But when you really see it, and again, the language patterns themselves aren't harmful. They're just, they're indicators. They're things that show us what's going on. That's the visible stuff that helps us know what's going on at the invisible level.
Well, what about when you see when someone, so Phil Mickelson, when he blew that U.S. Open, I forget.
2006.
Yeah, thanks. You know, I'm such an
golf
idiot.
Nerd.
Or you hear golfers. Yeah, yep. Thank you. You hear golfers all the time. Like, I'm such an asshole. I can't believe it. I'm such a jerk. I think that's somewhat natural. But do you think there's an indicator there of, say, an unconscious belief? And do you think it's wise for people to catch themselves using that kind of language and then perhaps to reframe it in such a way?
Yeah, it's self-awareness is really the key to all of this, is to be able to observe these things and then reflect on it and go, okay, so I just use a language pattern that represents an idea that I might have too much of my sense of self attached into, you know, this game I'm playing, and then understand that it's like, okay, I can't just detach. It's like, you know, Tim has a door behind him. We're on video and there's a door behind Tim. And I said, well, just stop thinking about that door. And I've brought your attention to that door and made it part of your consciousness. So in terms of like, hey, look, how do I want to go home feeling good about myself, independent from how my game was? So how I feel about my game is a separate entity from how I feel about myself.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to define what that is. And so I think we've talked about John Wooden on this show before. I use John Wooden's definition of success. John Wooden, for those who don't know, he was a basketball coach at UCLA back in the, I think, the 60s and 70s, and he...
Like 10 national championships or something,
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, they were in 12, and he won 10, which is, yeah, like, ridiculous, right? Like, that's unheard of. That's dominance times 10. And his definition of success is, or was, he's gone now, but success is peace of mind attained only through self-satisfaction in knowing you made the effort to do the best of which you're capable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people's first reaction to that when they hear that is like, oh, isn't that nice? You tried your hardest.
You did your best. But, here's a ribbon.
Yeah, exactly. But I would agree with that, that it's like, you know, that's just a little bit of the ego slipping in and judging it. But if we go to the first part of that statement, it's more important. Success is peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it's attained through self-satisfaction. Everyone gravitates to the second part of it. Yeah, got to work harder. It's like, okay, fine, fair enough. But how are you organizing yourself? How are you, at the end of the day, are you going home and consciously checking boxes to say, I did my job, maybe my skills off, maybe it wasn't my day, maybe I got to get different equipment, maybe I learn the strategy of the game better. Then you can identify flaws in your game without identifying them as flaws in yourself. And this is how people get really protective. If you give them feedback, you can kind of tell if someone says, hey, you know what, you should develop a better strategy, and they'd be like, fuck off.
Hey, now.
Because it's like, Hey, we swear on this show, don't we?
No, we do.
Listen, a lot. It seems to be going more and more with every show.
Yeah, every show there's more
Tim,
swearing.
Tim, I'm proud of you. You're in on
Oh,
the
I know,
game.
Tim. Dude, I said this last week. Golf course Tim says fuck all the time, and it's the greatest thing. Anyways, please continue and finish your thought.
sorry, now I got to think. Oh, yeah. So whenever you point out something like...
Right.
You should probably learn more about strategy. They take offense to it because mm-hmm. now you're not attacking their strategy. You're attacking them.
Yes.
And that's in their mind. And it's not conscious. They're not aware of it. They just become very sensitive to any type of feedback, especially if it's involuntarily provided.
All of what you said, I would like to just... If it were a puppy, I would adopt it. It was so good. By the way, speaking of which, ever since you said Tim's door, all I can think of is behind that door is where the dog puked. Anyway, that's a callback, kids, for about 25 minutes ago. No, everything you just said is very, very key. One of the things I wrote down, and this is so true, is the less we attach ourselves to the outcome, and the more we do our job, which is the process... The less the outcome, good or bad, is we get a chance to sort of have it at arm's length. And I can tell you, we started working together in the summer of 2014, you and I, and I learned a lot of technique. And you taught me a lot, and things improved for me. And over the 10 years, I got better at handling myself. But it wasn't until a few years ago when I realized that how I showed up. And how I the peace that I get from golf now. This is why you and I have to catch up because I've got so much more balance now around the game because of that. Because that my enjoyment of the experience is now part of the process of the experience, and I'm able to leave the outcomes where they need to be. Which is, hey, today wasn't my day. Today's the eighth tournament round I've played in 9 days. Yeah, I'm going to be a little tired. I use this word because I've given myself the grace that I used to not allow myself. And so I don't punch the inside of the windshield of my car when I've had a bad round now. And that's a true story. What do you think of that, Palsy?
Yeah, that's cool. It's as soon as something is attached, like you can, if you guys went and had a game of Monopoly, you might want to win and you might, hate losing, but you get over it quickly and it's not that big a deal, even though there's like this disappointment that it's like, oh shit, I wanted to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's still going to be there in golf. You're not going to walk away going, well, just because I've detached myself from the outcome doesn't mean you still don't feel disappointed or satisfied with the outcome. It just doesn't. It still hurts, but it doesn't bother you. Is probably the best way to say it.
Yep.
So that it's like, ah, damn, that was a shitty shot. Versus, oh my God, I'm quitting.
well, yes, exactly. Yeah, I've had that reaction. Well, that's it. I'm walking in from this point.
Yeah.
Listen, man.
Me too, man.
Always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Hey, can I finish that point? Because there's something
yes,
important.
Yes, please.
When your sense of self is attached to something, your body starts to react as if it's a death threat.
Yes.
With your fight or flight system. And that's where there's There's out of proportion reactions
yes.
to things because it literally fires off the survival instincts in us because we've got these things cross-wired. So if our identity, our sense of self is attached to what we do, it's kind of like our brain thinks our body is being attacked as opposed to just...
And the thing is, you can breathe all you want. You can't
yeah,
breathe.
Exactly.
Here's the thing. You can't breathe or meditate yourself out of that. It has to be a paradigm shift because I've done it. I mean, my neutrality reaction to any shot I hit on the golf course now is what keeps my fight or flight cortisol from spiking because I have zero reaction. I have a neutral reaction to a bad shot in so much that, oh, yeah, that sucked, but it's not inside me. It's not visceral anymore.
Yep. until you go upstream and identify the actual cause.
Yeah, man.
You're going to have to, and breathing and things is great for managing the symptoms.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I think a thing that we've talked about a number of times in your past lovely appearances on our program is awareness. And it's being aware that these things are happening. This is, oh, I'm prone to this. I'm prone to this type of behavior. And like you said, you know, meditation or breathing doesn't cure it, but it's training. And that's, I think, part of the
actually, meditation. Meditation is one of the injunctions that gets to the root cause.
Yeah.
Because a side effect of meditation is that you relax, but it's really the awareness you develop that is the injunction.
No, but what you just said a second ago about
that skill of awareness.
About being upstream, though. Like the meditation is great because I've been doing it for years now, but you need to go upstream, as you said, and find the cause first, because meditation will help you after. Meditation will get you in a mode of, as Tim says, of awareness. But, you know, if you're not aware that your behavior is not only counterintuitive, but it's shitty to be around.
Yeah, and it speaks to what Paul was saying earlier. What meditation does, it's in essence, it's the training. You're training yourself around your skill of awareness. And it also, by doing that, you're training yourself to stay true to those commitments that you've made to yourself of what you're going to pay attention to. Because it's so, what we've been talking about is really cool stuff. It just resonates big time with me. But it's counterintuitive to that golf culture that says, if you do this, you do that, you scroll through your phone and you're going to find answers and solutions and fixes to all kinds of things. But you know, it's the hard work. It's the training, the commitment that you stay with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Paul Doolin, you're an angel. That's for sure. We certainly appreciate you're a big, giant, sweet angel. I would give out your website, but no one can work with you. That's not available. If you want to find out more about Paul, you can. I mean, you can go there. It's Paul Dooland, D-E-W-L-A-N-D, pauldooland.com. And it's always a pleasure catching up with you. It's been too long, and we'll have you back hopefully sooner than later. All right, my friend, take care. Take care, and
always be a blast, well. Boys.
You're a blast.
Thank you, sir. Cheers.
Bye bye. I love that guy. Damn it,
we do. Get we do. We love that fella.
Yeah, that was really interesting too, because you as well. I think part of the. I hate to use the word journey, but I will.
Yeah, go ahead.
Part of the journey of going from a guy that could recite chapter and verse myself about all the mental techniques and all that stuff, it didn't get to me. I don't know why I pronounced get that way. It didn't get me to where I can just enjoy golf for golf's sake without attaching so much to it. You know, I've had a lot of wins in that area the last few years, and that my experiences, good and or bad, are all very similar. I enjoy myself. I leave the golf course now not feeling drained and depressed, because I did. I used to get depressed.
Oh, you're tough, man. Totally get it.
And not feeling that. And, you know, and yeah, looking back on rounds and going, oh, yeah, that was a curious thing you did there. But you know, like it doesn't, like what he said about it, not it. And I listen, I've got the Paul Doolin course. I did many sessions with Paul, and could tell you, regurgitate back some of the things we worked on. But until I got it at a upstream level of like, okay, Howard, yes, all these techniques that Paul's got you doing are great, but if you still want to punch yourself in the face, you're missing the point.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I got to know Paul way back in, I think, a few years before I knew you. So, you know, that's like 2012. And he started to coach me. And, you know, but anyways, that's just to say that we go so far back with that man. But the thing that it's, you know, we were talking about this, I remember, with Carl Morris, is that not unlike golf swings and looking for tips on what to do with your elbows, there's tips that you can do with your mental game. But as you just said, it's not till you do the deeper work to like who the hell am I as a person, and how do I attach as a golfer? Am I am I attaching my identity to how I perform, to my golf scores? Because that's a tough place to be. So to me, it's not only the psychology of the game, but it's the spirituality of the game.
Yeah, I love that.
And until you do that work, until you go to those places you actually really don't want to go, that's where the hard work is done, and that's where the change happens.
In the recent article that Tim wrote about me on the Club Link, and did we? I think we put it up on our Facebook page.
Yep. Yeah, it's on the linknews.ca as Link well. News.
But one of the things I quote in there is our friend Mike Bondi talking about, you know, he always signed his, he signs all his emails with "Play great or be great to play with." And where I was, even after I'd started working with Doolin, is I could be great to play with as long as I was playing great. Like a lot of people, you know?
Yep. I got my hand up.
Well, a lot of us, you know, somebody pointed this out a few years to me. I thought it was a few years ago to me. I thought it was pretty funny. Do you ever notice how people will fix more ball marks or get the sand to fill a divot after they've hit a really good shot, but sometimes after a bad shot they're like, fuck it, and they just
exactly totally
just walk away. So being being great to play with,
a
combination of things. There's that, and the fact that and these things resonated with me, things that you and I have talked about privately, our friend Kent Osborne, who I've become pretty close friends with, and one of the things in Kent's book, which we'll talk about at some point, he calls it the final putt. And it's like, the idea is, if this was your last round this weekend, this Canada Day weekend, how would you want your last round to be? And I decided I didn't want my last one to be where I was a dick and I wanted to fucking slam the ground all the time. Like, I don't even sometimes I think about that guy, and that's not that long ago. Somebody pointed out this past weekend to me, because they played with me in the club championship. The first one I won was 2018 or something. That's 7 years ago for me or whatever, 6 years ago. And he said, that was the year I shot 80 in the first round, and I punched the inside of my windshield. I came back the next day, shot a low round, and won it in a playoff. And he was there. He said, I remember seeing you. He said, I thought you were a psycho. I said, well, I was. Because he played two rounds with me this past weekend, and there's just no reaction. I react when I've hit a really good shot. I get very excited on the golf course. And I react when you hit a good shot. When I hit a bad shot, I have worked hard to have no reaction. Because I know that not only is it counterintuitive, but it makes me feel shitty.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But that's wisdom. And wisdom comes from hard experience, and you grow up. And it's so easy to look back at I think most people, unfortunately, what we associate with getting, say, older, is looking back with regret.
Mm.
And rather than, what did I learn from my life? How did my previous experience in my life get me to where I am? And how have I learned from that? And how have I, adjusted and moved along? And that's really what life is. It's in so many ways. Is that what have I learned? Because unfortunately, we live in a culture of shaming. Quite honestly, we shame ourselves. We shame others. If you don't live up to what I perceive as the standards of dress or how you should act or how you should perform, well, we shame that person. We make judgments, and we do that to ourselves. It's all projection of our own bullshit. It's all the stuff that we feel about ourselves we project out onto the world.
Mm-hmm.
And if we come back to that awareness piece, oh yeah, I've got this tendency, I do this, and then I see this and I increase my awareness. So when it comes up, when I find that I'm in it, my awareness allows me to respond and get out of it.
Very well said. I'm looking. I just noticed your T-shirt. Is that the T-shirt you got at the Golf Journalist golf tournament?
Yes, it is.
That's very cool, dude.
It is very nice.
I was talking to you before the show started today, and I was going to relay some stuff, some wisdom that you laid on me several years ago now. That has came up in a conversation about my performance on the weekend. Again, I think I'd mentioned last week, and I reminded everyone this week that I played 8 tournament rounds in 9 days. And I say tournament because none of those rounds didn't have a consequence, outcome, scorecard, golf genius. It was posted. They were all rounds like that.
Put them all in.
And, you know, I'm pretty experienced, but I'm just human. And I will tell you, on the weekend, I played our senior club championship, and it was won by a great player named Colin Chung. And get this, he beats Doug Brophy, who's one of the best guys in the country, senior golfers in the country, in a 10-hole playoff, dude. Ten holes.
Sawed it off for 9?
10 holes.
Oh, my goodness.
It was crazy. And I finished 4th behind these guys. And I can tell you, in 36 holes, I had 2 doubles and a triple. So that's 7 over par for 3 holes. And I played the other 33 holes 4 over par. So I played some pretty good golf. On the second day, it was the second or third windiest day any of us can remember at Glen Cairn. It was like gusting 65. And I had it going. I was even par with 3 holes to go. And I just want to talk about this one particular shot because it kind of ties in with something you taught me a long time ago and something Paul talked about. The thing that Tim talked with me about a long time ago was sometimes we have late round breakdowns. And I said to Tim, I don't know what's going on with me. I can't finish a round. And Tim said, are you eating all the time? And I was like, oh, maybe I need to eat more or make sure I drink water more because I thought I was doing a pretty good job. But in this particular case, I don't know what it was. I just had this round going. And I hit a shot that if I were caddying for you, I'd never let you hit I would never let you have hit the shot that I hit. But my mind was just, I guess.
You mean the choice of shot?
The choice of shot that I hit was the kind of mistake that I don't normally make. But as soon as I hit it, I was like, oh no. I was like, Howard, like, what were you thinking, dude? So my point about I can just tell you, it's the kind of shot where if I saw you, it was a hanging lie, so the ball's above my feet, and I have a rule, like any time I have to hit anything more than a 6 or 7 iron, when the ball's that far above my feet, I pass. I don't shoot. I find some safety. But in this particular case, I was feeling good, and I had like 195 into a howling wind, so I was going to hit this hybrid, and I chunked it into a hazard because it was just the wrong shot. And it had nothing to do with my skill, which is what he's talking about. It had to do with my awareness in that moment. And in that moment, the 7th round out of 8 rounds in 9 days, I just made a bad choice. So how can you get mad at that? I didn't, actually. Right. As soon as I hit it, I actually went, my reaction was kind of like, I was like, oh, really, Howard? You thought that was a good idea? Like, I really should have just, forget hybrid, I should have hit 8 iron.
Yeah.
To safety, made bogey at worst. At worst, I'm making bogey.
Yeah.
But I ended up making a big number, and I finished the last 3 holes 4 over par. And I shot good. No, listen, I had one of the lowest rounds of the day. It was a really tough day. There was more rounds.
Oh, in a wind like that,
it was crazy. I shot 76. But it was a round where it was a special. It could have been a very special round, and it was special. I played great. But the takeaway being, because of you, I thought to myself, maybe I wasn't feeding the machine late in the round like I was taught, like I normally do. And so that was one of the takeaways. But as Paul was saying, I didn't have any identity. I attached zero identity to my skill in that moment. I just, as I was driving home, I was like, man, that was a great day. You know, I just didn't have it. I didn't have the focus I needed for the last 3 holes. And that is something he was talking about distinctions. Making that distinction for all of us gives you a chance to not beat yourself up that you can't hit really hard shots. Like it was, honestly, everybody who saw me hit it saw the same thing. What are you doing? I go, I don't know. I have no idea. Apparently.
Well, you're kind of asleep on yourself, but
yeah.
I mean, you play that many days in a row, that many tournament rounds. Tournament golf is so different than casual golf. Your awareness, your energy level, your focus, it's all ramped up.
Yeah.
You know, casual golf is just, you know, walk in the park, as Mo used to say. So, yeah, there's a cost there, and you're going to be tired. So that maybe, you know, part of the – there's always, like, what's the learning I take out of these things? That's, you know, that sounds so cliche, but that's, to me, you know, what else have you got? I mean, you can shoot a low score. We've all had it. You know, you shoot a really low score, and you think the next day I own golf, and then you shoot a high score. What happened? Well, you didn't forget how to golf. Maybe you're just tired or something. It happens. But what do I learn? And so maybe for you, it was like, okay, it was a reminder, if you will. You got to keep eating food and maybe carry the awareness. Today, I'm going to be tired. It's going to be a tough day weather-wise. I got to really keep my wits about me.
Yeah. A younger version of yourself just said to me, man, you got to, you know, there's a biological imperative to keep. And I was drinking water, I thought, but I realized at that point in the round, I hadn't eaten anything for at least 6 or 7 holes. You know, I hadn't been giving myself some energy, and you need the energy to make better decisions, because it wasn't the shot I hit. The shot was going to be as a result of this terrible decision.
We talk some good stuff here sometimes, but I don't always walk my talk. I mean, last year in the Senior Club C, I didn't have a rain jacket, and it started to rain, and I realized at a certain point that I hadn't eaten anything for 6 effing hours.
Wow.
And I shit the bed, and it was like, oh my God, you goofball. But you know, as a goofball, I'm learning.
By the way, if you've been keeping track today, we've got from Tim O'Connor, who keeps 2 goshes, 1 fuck, a couple of shits. Oh yeah, it's a completely different guy. I wanted to talk about your book, and I do have to get going. Unfortunately, I've got this commitment, so I will leave the putting thing till another time. But Tim's book, 7 Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds, is getting close to all of us being able to. Well, I've read it, but other people getting a chance to see it. And it's filled with good stuff. And what is the any updates on it since I saw your email here a couple days ago?
I'm finishing as we are proofing it. I'm finished the proofing, and I am sending it back to the designer. And so I don't know. It could be 2, 3, 4 weeks. I don't know. Whatever it'll be, what it'll be. I'll keep everyone posted on my Substack and through our program. And
all right,
but it's moving along.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, as a lot of our listeners are. Now, is next week our last week for a couple of weeks? You're going to go away, or
we got 2 more shows to do.
Yeah, Tim's going to take a break. Choose.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to be gone July 13th to the 29th.
Perfect. Well, we can save some stuff for next week. I've got some great audio of the 2 men who were debating last night, talking about who's got the lower handicap and some of the bullshit that I say. It's unbelievable, really.
I couldn't believe. Yeah, I read that this morning. I couldn't believe they just sent it into that.
Oh yeah, it was crazy.
Oh my God, the Democrats are just in a.
Well, the whole thing is hilarious.
Crazy. Our guy's too old. Oh my God. See,
both of them are too old. One guy just blathered on nonstop about all the lies, and the other guy was, honestly, the other guy looked like he would have rather been at home on the couch. Thanks again to Paul Dooland, and thanks to everybody who listened and listens. TaylorMadeGolf.ca is how you get a hold of them. WhoIsOscarBravo.ca and SecretLinks.golf. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tim. See ya.
Get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime, sound of the river, you stop and you hold everything.